they were fighting this infantry, they were brought in for them. They weren't fighting as them, but it was a different type of attack. They like to get close range.
Which is their method.
Absolutely. We had a little officer, a grand little chap. He joined the Paddles after they came into our area. He must have applied to join the Paddles, and the Lieutenant Warrior, who his name was, and he went with his batman and he joined the Paddles, and then Dammy was killed on that effort I'm talking about. I got hold of his batman. I knew his batman, of course, because he was in our company. And he was shot point blank range by a jury. And the batman was just behind. He said, "I got the jury, though." And poor old Warrior, he only just joined them a few days before.
Where did you rejoin the 16th Battalion?
Well, I couldn't tell you what the place was. I can't visualise at all where I got back to. But we were pushing him back then. We were away miles, we were beyond Sedgenhead, and we were pushing him back well and truly then. This was after the Paris came along. They got things moving, and they were pushed back and on. I was with them, and I was with them quite a while when they were being... It was one incident. I went out with from an area where they moved back up. They left this big house and moved further back and established the company office again. And I went out with a sergeant at about six paras. And we went up this track off the main road, which took us away God knows where. But there was fighting going on, and it was in the area where the other HQ had been. And we went up this track, and they were established themselves just before a bend. And we knew, well, then the Paris knew that the jury wasn't far away, and he was pushing us this way, pushing us back. And I said, well, finally, there was a couple of. I stayed with these 7, 8 chaps, and they were linked up with radio to the HQ. And the sergeant, there was one conversation I had. He said, what do we do with these Arabs, as they call them? He said, there seem to be several of them coming up this valley. What are we going to do about them? He said, they don't seem to stop. But he said, where are they aiming for? What do we do about them? And he said, and apparently the word came back over the phone, if you accost them and they don't stop, shoot the buggers. And they did. There was one coming up the track where these lads were, these 7 lads were. They were just sort of waiting for something to happen, whatever, around the bend, what we couldn't see. And this one came up the track, and then there was a drop down there, and there was another Arab at the bottom. These two Arabs were having a shouting conversation across the valley, you see. And they apprehended this one that was walking up this track beyond where we were. And they just took him in hand and were questioning him. But the other one, they shouted at him to stop down at the bottom. And he didn't. He ran. So up with a blooming rifle, shot him. Man, they shot a few, did the paras. They interrogated him. They found out what they'd been doing. Intelligence had found out a lot of those Arabs, civilians, they were coming into our camp, being friendly and selling stuff, pretending to be selling eggs and things. And they were also going into Jerry's camp and selling him information as well. So the order was, any don't have anything to do with any Arab civilians. And if they br- brought them in. They used to interrogate them. And they would say, away from this HQ they were in this big house. They'd way up the couple of soldiers, a couple of lads with their rifles and an officer. They way up the valley and you'd hear three bangs. The Arabs bit the dust. They didn't stand any nonsense from the Arabs.
Was the same order given to 16th Battalion and the other battalions?
Well, I don't know. I didn't say which prisoners that we took. I don't think. Well, we were non-existent then as a fighting unit. It was only when I was with the Paras that I saw all this. If they were bringing prisoners in every time they came, the German prisoners, they were enemy, but these Arabs used to come through the counter pretending to be selling stuff, you see. Of course, naturally, if it was easy for them, they would be making money. If Jerry would pay them, we would pay them. Aye. Anyway.
So you were with the Paris, I think you said 4 or 5 weeks.
Yeah.
So this must have been getting on towards April.
Oh, yes, it was.
Did you rejoin the battalion?
Because we were, the first area I can remember when I got back to my unit, they'd been reinforced, of course, not up to full strength by any manner of means, but we were at Google plain, and we were just short one stop hill then, and it was just over the hills to Tunis itself. That's when I got back to the battalion.
Staying in the same routine again.
Yeah. I'd had my own truck all the time, you see. And
had you the same transport officer as you had in England?
Yes, Richardson. No. Yes, Richardson went abroad with us. Yes. The captain, I think he was a captain. Yeah, nice bloke. Yes, we had a very old MTA officer when we were in England, McPhee, a Scotsman. He was too old for blind. He didn't go out with us anyway.
What are your memories of what was left of the Tunisian campaign?
Well, Gobelat Plain, for instance. That was a vast area at the foot of the hills. It was a big area of flat. Whatever, acres and hundreds of acres of it. And there was a terrific bombardment. At the time, they were swanking about it being the biggest array of artillery guns to fire all in one bombardment. And that was from Gobelat Plain. They were all over the damn place. And we'd been moving quickly. We weren't stationed anywhere very long. When I just joined my battalion back, and we were moving all every day. We were moving somewhere and forward, you know. And we went into a little valley, and there was a river running down, and there was grass growing and all. It was like paradise, peaceful. It was just before evening. This was, and we thought, I hope we stop here a bit. Well, there was a lot of troops, and the troops were camping out and all. Well, not camping out, but having meals and that. And we only stayed there the one day. Next day, we had to start shipping all the stuff that we'd carted in, and we had to have bicycles, and God knows, and I was running back and forth from one spot to another spot where this bombardment was going to take place from Gobelat Plain. It was going to be over 1,000 guns stretched out all over the place, shelling in at the last push for Tunis, you see. And the order came round that all transport that was being moved in the area had to be off lagered wherever they were by the dusk. And the company's quartermaster. They'd had me moving stuff all day from one spot to another. And I was getting worried. I thought, well, I'm going to be... I'd been parked in a wadi where the truck was almost out. There's several trucks in the wadi. The we were down below the level of the banks on both sides. That's a riverbed, you know, Woody. And I was in there, but I've been up and down, up and down, up and down with this quartermaster, moving air company stuff into another spot. Equipment and whatnot, and bicycles and God knows what. And I wasn't going to get packing. Where this body was, when it was daylight, I knew exactly where it was. But there was it just pulled over an old railway line, and I said to this quartermaster, I said, we're supposed to be off the area parked right before dark. I said, I don't think we're going to be. Well, he said, we won't be far off. We won't be far off. This is the last road. Well, we weren't. I missed the dam. It got dark. And I missed this. It was just like a bit of a rise over this old railway line and then into a wadi along here. And of course, I missed the damn thing. And the artillery were just beginning to start firing. Well, he says, quartermaster, he says, I'll get in front of you, Jen. He said, I'll walk in front of you. And if there's a battery, you just fire and I'll stop you. And so we set off. First battery came to, they were firing. When they stopped firing for a few seconds to reload or something, suddenly I sees him drop flat on the ground. The quartermaster was in front of me. I thought he'd been hit with something. But no, he'd seen the guns were just starting up again. And my God, it was frightening. You couldn't drive across the front of him. He wasn't doing no wrong with him. He was just making himself small, you see. Yes, so I spent the whole of that night lost in this damn bombardment, trying to find where the hell this body was. And the guns, you know, you just had to pick your way through when they fired so many rounds, and then they had a bit of a break, and I had to push on then. And Quartermaster was with me all night. It was only when it got daylight I found out where I was and where I should have been.
So you were driving in and out of the guns?
One a night. Oh, God, I was terrified. It was really something. There were big guns, there were different sizes and all. There were long tongues and God knows what. And they were all firing away there all night. I'll never forget that bloody night. And now this damn quartermaster, just typical of him.
What was his name?
I don't know. I've forgotten now. He was a company quartermaster at the time. He had lost a few by then, you know. There was that many strange faces. I never got to know a lot of them after
Where
that.
Were the drafts coming from?
The what?
Where were the drafts to the regiment, to the battalion coming from?
Well, it was where bits and pieces of other decimated. We'd had a lot of Welshmen. Remnants of a Welsh regiment came to went the DLI at this point.
Did they settle down all right? Were they okay?
Oh, they were good soldiers. Yes, they were wild men. When you were in civvy, when you were in not fighting, they were a wild lot. They were Welsh. Oh well, they lived life to the full. They weren't as gentle and dogmatic as the North countrymen, the Geordies and the Tidesiders.
What happened to you next?
Well, I was going to that plane. Another little incident when I was in that body. There was a last area, and there was a jeep came over to where from across the plane. There was sort of tracks here and there, and he came in a jeep, and a young officer got out. And he said, how did you get into here from the main road there? I said, well, there's a little place over the old railway line, just so and so back there. I said, it's sort of a bridge. And he said, could we get tanks over it? I said, well, I mean, I said, what do you mean? come in and normally I'd get a bloody tank. So this little bit, I don't know what happened to him, but he had 12, 13 tanks he was bringing along.
So you were getting 12 tank support at this time?
Aye.
What about air support? Had that come along by now?
Oh, we'd got air support by then, yeah. But we only started to get air support when the ground really dried up and they could operate from Earth. And I mean, after the spring, and we got rid of the rainy season, the land got so hard we could have airplanes operate all over the place. And we didn't. The Americans were the first to get up into the air, and what a mess they made of it. They started bombing our troops 30 miles the wrong way. Yeah, the Americans did. We were told about this, what had happened. The officers told us. Typical Americans. They went the wrong, didn't know the left. They didn't know the left hand from the right.
Did you meet any Americans at this
we
time?
We met a lot of them.
What were they like?
Same braggarts. God blimey. They were full of wind. There were no sort of fighters either at that time. They were inexperienced. They were so incensed with the idea of how important they were as Americans. The attitude was, oh, Sol and Jerry knows we're here, little scarper. It was just the opposite. If the Americans took over from units of English troops, and they were going to hold a position, Jerry puts an attack in straight away. The brigade of guards had fought and taken Longstop, and they'd had a right battle and all for one Longstop hill. But they took it and they held it. They were a hell of a good fighting unit, and they took it. And I met a sergeant later. He was a Yorkshireman, and he was in this. He was wounded in this Longstop battle. And he said, the Americans were supposed to relieve us, he says. And says, we took over, and he says, before we'd got to the bottom of the hills, he says, the bloody Americans overtook us. Jerry had routed them straight away. And the guards had turned back and retake it. So they were popular.
Where was your next
move? Well, then it was Tunis.
And was this the end of the campaign?
Yeah. There was a long what was the call that piece sticking out into the sea beyond Tunis? I've forgotten the name now.
It's some kind of peninsula, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. We took so many prisoners, we took thousands, we had them bottled off there. It was like a Dunkirk for them. But they didn't get any off because our British Navy was in the Mediterranean. And they saw that there was no troops got off there. And we took thousands and thousands and thousands. You wouldn't have thought there was any German soldiers left. It's the performance of all these camps with Jerry's in.
Get involved in the Tunis victory parade?
I don't think I would have told him did either. It was supposed to be Americans, of course, first in. Oh yes, it had to be Americans. And I heard all about it, but wasn't worried about that. We were only thankful the damn campaign was over.
That was the 12th of May when it ended.
Did it?
What did you do then?
Then we moved to a place called Hammond Leaf for a rest and a relaxation, and it was on the outskirts of Tunis. Beautiful little area, a beautiful beach, and we were supposed to have leisure and luxury there. We set up cooking arrangements, and it was red hot. God, it was hot too. But we're on the We felt sorry for ourselves. We were running limited trucks into Tunis every day. And we, us drivers, weren't allowed to leave our trucks. We had to stay with our trucks, hang around doing demo all day. Because there comes a thieving by the flaming mobs. You don't leave a truck because everything would go off it, out of it. Staying back. Steal things from under your blooming eyes. And that was how a Tunis break.
Did you see any important visitors to Churchill and Eden Turner?
Oh, yes, I was in that parade. Yeah. They took us out in trucks early morning. This, as you say, it was the end of the action. Took us out in trucks. And we lined up the miles of road, thousands of blooming troops from all over the place. Each side of the road, just outside of what town was that? Well, it was out. It was in Tunisia, of course it was. I don't know what the town was anyway. But anyways, outside of the big town. And we were told that Churchill and Eden and somebody else, some big noise.
The Imperial General Staff.
Yeah. Oh, that was it, was it? Aye. And we were there by 8 o'clock in the morning, lined up on the roadside, hundreds of us. And we were told when Churchill and his retinue come along, we want you all to cheer and throw your hats in the air. Well, we stood, and it was getting hotter and hotter and hotter and bloody hotter. And come, it was roasting. And there we were, stood on that flaming road, no shelter. It was 11 o'clock when it came, and we'd been there from 8 o'clock in the morning. And the only people that cheered threw nuts in the air were the officers. The word had gone a long way. We're not cheering and throwing a what after treating us like this, bugger Churchill. And it had gone along the line, and they couldn't arrest us all. Got a right talking to him, mind you, but we were so utterly. Well, I mean, it was inhuman. We never should have been there. They should have given some indications to what time they would be there, the big noises. No, anyway, they just drove slowly along in the bloody big limousine.
And early June you moved to Bleeder.
Ah, yes, that was right back over the Atlas Mountains. That was 30 miles inland from Algiers.
What were you doing there?
Having a great time. Really. Life was easy, food was good, and it was a very nice little town. There wasn't much in the way of excitement or pleasure. And there was a brothel there, but it was put out of bounds to other ranks. So we'd been there very long, but that didn't bother me anyway.
It wasn't out of bounds
for
the officers and NCOs, though.
Oh, no, they Yeah. Well, there would be some incidents, you see. Our lads couldn't conduct themselves. They made fool of themselves with drink. And they thought they could drink these damn wines just like they would drink beer in England. But you couldn't. You couldn't drink it like beer. They used to get in the most holy states with it. Oh, God. They would go mad with it, you know. Some terrible incident. But Bleeder, well, they did a lot of little piddling exercises and set up like trail finding and what is to call these dudes that do with cars round here, you look for clues somewhere. Treasure rooms, they did quite a few of them. Had a good day, one or two good days out on that sort of thing. the our little sergeant major, Tug Wilson, our OC, this was Major Vizard by then, and he gave little Tug Wilson, A Company sergeant major, he could take a truck, one of our trucks, and take his own batman with him, and a truck and a driver, and he could go off for a week and go where he liked, providing he was in range of Algiers, so that I could, Bleda, so that I could go each night and collect rations. Well, we had a great time, little Sergeant Major and me, driving up riverbed bottoms and God knows what. Well, a week of it. The only thing was, it was so hot, it was killing by 3 o'clock in the afternoon. It was just about unbearable. We were well inland, you see, there. We had a good week.
And you stay there until you left for Berserta?
Yeah, we went back over the Atlas Mountains.
Did you know what was going to happen to you at that point in time?
Not a lot. We didn't know anything definite. We knew, we expected, it would be the final deal, because it had to be. That was the next. Montgomery had already landed in the Torbitch and lived from Sicily. And he was having a rough time with it.
You sailed from Algiers, didn't you, to Fort Deserted? Or you, of course, you were transported.
No, I drove. We drove in convoy again over the Atlas Mountains.
And the battalion went by sea.
Yeah, that's right, I believe so. Sea, did they? Oh, not train, eh? Oh, no, they were going a bit further this time, weren't they?
11th of August they left.
Ah. I think that's in that little book, isn't it, somewhere?
And you drove over to meet them in Berserta?
We went right to Berserta.
What was happening there?
Well, there was thousands of troops collected there, all over the very big area. All sorts of battalions of all descriptions, you know. And we were pulled into an area. We joined the lads then. The lads were already camped in tents on the outskirts of Berserta. And we were sort of on a hill that, if we went up the top of this hill, we looked right down on the vale of Berserta. It was a marvellous view. It was a marvellous view at night when the jury came over every night with two or three planes. Suicide planes, they never ever, I don't think any of them got away. Because all the ships in the harbour, you know, all these flat bottom landing craft, you know, and they were all armed. Well, talk about fireworks. Every night he was over. Mind you, we did a bit of damage. There was one or two petrol dumps. Petrol was dumped in stacks of it, like great big mounds of it, in these 4 gallon petrol cans. And that was our farmer's source of supply of petrol, or it was in Africa as well. And we left thousands of gallons of petrol in. It had got into such a bad state, a lot of these tins. They didn't dare load them because they would take fire.
These weren't the jerry cans, the original tins that they had.
That's how the petrol was stored all the time we were in action.
Easy leak.
4 gallon